going deep. I feel like Kalo on the Miami Heat. The words I speak off this sheet are like a three-peat. I don't just hop on a track, I bring running cleats. I'm a player for real, more than an athlete. Let my mama tell it, could have ran for the Senate. Instead I penned it for Donovan Bennett. I'm cemented, this a deep dive. In your headphones or a long drive, up close and personal, just like you courtside. There ain't no out of bounds here, no offsides. We going live in 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. You are now tuned in to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
That's right, it is Going Deep, and I am Donovan Bennett, and we are going to go deep and dream big on this edition of the podcast as we are celebrating all things Giants of Africa and talking to one of Africa's many giants in Masai Ujiri, but also talking to a fellow giant of Africa and a member of his Toronto Raptors coaching staff, Jama Mahelala, who maybe is less known by some Raptors fans, but we hope that that's not the case by the end of this episode, because a really cool story as a Canadian originally from Swaziland that has done great things both here in Canada, but on the continent of Africa through the game of basketball and beyond. So we are going to get to not only Jama's story and how he's been a volunteer and help to what Masai Ujiri has built with Giants of Africa and with the Toronto Raptors. But before we get to both men, I have to acknowledge, celebrate, recognize what an accomplishment 20 years of being inspired by the youth of Africa and providing opportunity for them is. And that's what it's been, 20 years for Giants of Africa. And it's going to be really celebrated around Nelson Mandela's birthday here in Canada and specifically in Toronto. By now, you're used to the Giants of Africa night games that have become a fixture and one of the hottest selling tickets at Scotiabank Arena. There'll be activations in and around the game showcasing African culture and celebrating with GOA. So certainly if you don't have a ticket to the game, then make sure you get one because you're going to want to be there. But the celebration goes far beyond that. There's a Dream Big clinic on December 2nd, which is something that is not a public event, but something we need to call out because I love that they're doing it. What it is, it's a collaboration with the Muslim Women's Summer Basketball League, hosting an all-girls basketball clinic led by an all-woman coaching staff. So that's something that is so important because the misnomer is that Giants of Africa has solely been about doing work on the continent and doing work for African people, but really it's finding strength in numbers. We saw that earlier this year when the first court donated by Giants of Africa went down in Edmonton in a very diverse community with a lot of African immigrants in it, but a court that will benefit the entire community. And certainly the hope is that the entire community comes out and supports these initiatives on December 3rd for the Dream Big Gala. It'll be a remarkable night. Number one, you got Boyz II Men performing. You got Tome performing. So it will be star-studded and obviously will be a reminder of exactly why all this work is done by the small but mighty Giants of Africa staff throughout the year. And I wanted to talk to Masai about that staff, both official and volunteers like Coach Jama, in terms of how they've helped get to 20 years and how they are helping to shape what the next 20 years might look like. As my conversations with Masai tend to do, they bounced around, became a bit of a stream of consciousness, and talked about all types of issues that impact the continent of Africa, African people, and all people, but wanted to really center and focus the people doing the work alongside him and the people and alumni who have benefited from that work. Let's go deep on Giants of Africa with Masai Ujiri.
Thank you. What matters is the fact that these kids from different tribes come together, display a sport in peace. We pray for these kids. We pray. And it's finally here, and they get to play the sport that they love.
You have a chance to help your family, to represent your country. This is not a joke. This is serious. You can change lives with this. So take this seriously.
I'm a dreamer. 20 years? That's an adult life? When you think of the lasting impact, but the longevity of what you started, what comes to mind?
You know, I just attended Chine's wedding, and in Chine's wedding, there were about 40 Giants of Africa alumni at the wedding because she got married to, she allowed me to say that she got married to a Giants of Africa alumni, Ralph, from 12 years ago. So I think when I think of all the things that we do, court builds, you know, community development, youth development, women empowerment, everything, you know, to lift basketball, youth, skill development, using basketball as a tool, education, all those things for me have resulted into actually this youth even teaching me and my group, you know, like how life really works, you know, and what a journey we all have had, and the unique opportunity of really growing. And that's what, honestly, like Giants of Africa has really been. But I also, saying all of this, I really look forward to like what the next 20 years is going to be, because I can't imagine seeing those 40 alumni, you know, and all these kids we've had the opportunity of really meeting in 17 different countries, traveling all around Africa, learning cultures, traveling all around the world, the diaspora, Canada here, the opportunity that's given me, Giants of Africa, and MLSC just built a court in Edmonton. It means a lot in an African kind of diaspora community. This all means, you know, like so much for us, you know, like, and how we keep growing and spreading. But when I think of the population of Africa and where it's going, I can't imagine, you know, like what the possibilities are. One out of every four persons in the world will be African in 2050. And the median age in Africa is 20 years old. 19, 20 years old, you know, then what? You know, I think I have to use this, it's an obligation to use this opportunity to affect these kids to know that through sports, through education, you can become something.
Talk about the continent, you know, it's not only non-black people, many black people don't understand the reality and the history of the continent. Many, because that history was stolen from them. What's one thing about Africa, past and future, that you think people should know?
You know, rich with history, resources, people, Africa's, I think, biggest jewel is people. You know, that's, it's the strength, the cleverness, the people, of this people. And I think people don't realize, you know, like how urbanized these cities, these places are becoming. And sometimes people don't understand the demographic in Africa, in this youth movement. And it's actually like overwhelming. And we have to do good for it to become big. And everywhere you look,
You know, like it's being affected one way or the other. In my industry, I come from the industry of sports, and I look at, example, you know, the African kids on our team from Pascal, Precious, Christian, all these guys, OG. I look at an MVP of the league that sat down in a basketball camp, you know, like thinking, this is an African kid, grew up in Africa, and now Joel Embiid is the MVP of the league. There's now a Basketball African League. So when I think of, when I look at Africa past and future, I think the dream is of what we say with Giants of Africa and dreaming big is huge, you know, and being part of it, not only as a youth growing up there, but also going back and engaging on highest level or community level or family level or whatever it is. There's so much in its past, and there's so much, you know, like that's going to be in the future.
Not only African players on your team, African coach, mm-hmm. Jama, mm-hmm. who's played a role in GOA. Do you remember your first interaction with him and what your thoughts of him were?
Yes, I landed in Toronto, and Brian Colangelo told me to go to a basketball camp that with Sam Mitchell in 2007. And who was running the basketball camp? It was Jama. And he was not even a coach, not even close. He was doing community development, you know, like with MLSC. And one of the most passionate persons, you know, like I've ever seen. And from that day on, you know, we became friends, and it's been incredible to see his growth, not only as in his career, but as a family man. Our interaction and trips to Africa, the connection, you know, like going to these camps, and every single coach is saying, you know, the camp hasn't started till Jama comes, you know, like, and his passion, incredible human being. I think the sky is the limit, and I'm super, super proud of him for all the experiences he's had, what he brings to us, what he brings to this youth. But as a Giant of Africa, too.
You don't have GOA for 20 years without volunteers, mm-hmm. without coaches like Jama. What has his impact been, and other volunteers like him been on the program over the years?
Huge, huge. I start with Godwin Owinje, who I co-founded Giants of Africa with. We were basketball players that dreamed about basketball camps because of our path to the NBA. So all these guys, Patrick Mutombo, Patrick Ingebert, all the coaches that have come with me, Eric Corey, who originally comes from Egypt, coaching 905. All the women, Sarah Chan, who works for us, Brittany, there's so many, you know, like you can't name them all, but the impact they've had, you know, the guys that work with me here, closely with Giants of Africa, that spirit, you know, like of owning it, is what a true giant means to me. That spirit of camaraderie, that spirit of resilience is what drives all of us, and I know it drives them a lot. And what's most important for me is team spirit, you know, like, and we all have that. And we fight for each other, we work for each other, we're not a big organization. And these volunteers, these guys that work for us, work with us, are incredibly dedicated, you know, to what the goal and dream of all these youth are, because it is all about, like, the youth.
Jama was away for a year, mm-hmm. but still connected to the city and to you know, everything that was going on. What's his approach like when it comes to being on a court in Rwanda in relation to being on the court at Scotiabank? How is he in those two settings?
It's the same passion of basketball. So it brings the same energy. I think he's a teacher in his true inner self. You know, there's a lot of teaching there. He's also personable, you know, and when I say personable, he relates to all the youth in a personable way, in a personal way. And same thing with the players, you know, like he relates to them in an incredible way, that they can talk to him about anything. And this is just who he is as a person. And we appreciate that about him.
You mentioned he's a friend. Was it weird when he wasn't around for a year?
Not really, because in the NBA, we're all about, like, beating each other's asses, you know? Like, so I'm sure he's trying to beat my ass and I'm trying to beat him. So we don't think about it like that, you know? Like, it's his growth going to an incredible place to work with Steve Kerr and Bob Myers at the time, you know, I think was an incredible experience for him, you know, like, which I love. So, yeah, but when they're not here, I don't think about them.
You always think of your alumni. We know the names that are in the league, on the team, but are there other notable alumni that you think of when you think of the fruits of the labor of what GOA has built?
You know, as I said, you know, I don't want to go into specific names. There's the Ralphs, the Tolus, the, you know, Precious or Christian. There's so many of them that are doing, you know, like, incredible things. And but I said to you, going to this, to Chine's wedding and seeing all these kids that have become doctors, lawyers, have become, owned their own businesses, you know, and a giant of Africa, like, youth. You know, kids that I had in camp. Yeah, to walk over there and see Ralph, who went to University of Miami, tore his leg up, resilience, came back, had a gruesome injury with his ankle, came back, and now got his degree in mechanical engineering, played college basketball still, played football, you know, and now, you know, like, a grown man, you know, like, and I walk into that wedding, and 7 out of 8 groomsmen are Giants of Africa alumni that live in the States and are working men, yeah, with beards, and I can't even, like, describe it. And there's about 30, 40 of them walking around that wedding, and all they want to do is take pictures and talk and hang out. One of the most fulfilling times, you know, like, for me. For me to be part of the Giants of Africa Festival this summer, to have 250 kids come to one place, you know, like, and celebrate and participate in what we felt was really, really, like, celebrating the African youth, to me was, it's all that embodies what, you know, we should feel proud about, but there's so much work to be done too, you know, like, and we have to engage them, you know, like, to also start doing things, you know, like, that affect even more youth on the continent.
I always have FOMO when I see GOA content online, but festival was another level. You engaging them not just with sports, but with music and culture. What do you think the lasting impact of festival will be?
It's going to touch this youth, because I think when you look at those people like Tiwa Savage or Davido, those guys grew up on the continent. You know, like, it's not, yeah, they're actually, like, from Africa, making impact. Tyra, they're all from Africa making incredible impact, and this youth see that. Yeah, so it's on all fronts, you know, it's doctors, it's chefs, it's pilots, it's basketball players, it's soccer players, it's artists now, you know, it's comedians. These kids are seeing that they can actually, like, do it, and they can become, And this is what this world, this generation, innovation, technology, our phones, and hopefully like more people going back to give back and believe in the continent. This is what it's doing. So festival brought all of that, you know, like together, what you said, sports, culture, entertainment, and just dream big, passion, you know, the passion for our continent, the support of President Kagame, the support of people on the continent. It was huge. Yeah, huge for us. And I know those youth who see it, that we can actually do events like this, and we can do celebrate times like this, and also, you know, dream to be bigger.
Festival was part of the evolution to dream to be bigger. So was fashion, Canada Goose partnership. You can add designer to your list of many titles. What does that sort of support mean to the foundation?
It's huge. You know, collaborations, how you relate to people. I relate to Danny Reese. I relate to Canada Goose because of coming to Canada, because of the cold, thinking of resilience, thinking of his company and what they've done, you know, and how they've built it, you know, and it relates to how we've built, you know, like Giants of Africa, and that's what we talked about, you know, like it's community, you know, it's resilience, it's youth, it's how you dream, you know, and we all have to, you know, innovate. We all have to be cool. We all have to relate to one another, you know, whatever generations it is. And I think doing this piece and how we look and, you know, how we portray ourselves in with a brand that I think is strong, one of the strongest outwear a company probably in the world, you know, like for us to collaborate with them, to me was absolutely huge. So to reimagine the Crofton vest and what it stands for, to stand side by side with Canada Goose and Giants of Africa, I can't imagine, you know, never imagined I would ever dream, you know, like this big, you know. And I want youth to see that. I want people to see that. I want Africans to see that. I want Canadians to see that, that we all like interact in one way. We all come together in one way, and this is what I think this is going to signify.
Muslim Women's Summer Basketball League, Giants of Africa is the foundation, but you haven't solely put your efforts in the continent. Why was that a strategic thing that you wanted to do this year?
Well, I think where we are in the world now, we all have, I have a unique space to have a voice, you know, and I think with all the countries we've traveled to, we've met Christians, Muslims, people of all beliefs, all cultures, and I think we want to respect them all. That's the space that sports gives us, is respecting people. Yeah, respecting what their culture is and respecting what they do. And we've always been a huge support of women empowerment. You know, we've gone into incredible communities, you know, like around the world in Africa. For me, that partnership, you know, and to encourage young women who play sport or a part of a community, whether it's the Muslim community or any community. For us, that's this is what we think of. This is what we engage. That's why we've been to Somalia many times, you know, like to engage with those girls, those young girls in Samburu in Kenya, you know, that have gone through such sometimes dehumanizing things, you know, and to encourage them and make them believe that they can become, and they are part of us, and they are same as us. There's nothing bigger, because they need to be given a platform too.
When you talk about the Black community, you have a unique perspective because you've intersected with it in so many places and so many levels. sometime within it, we put in a box, whether you're South African or North African or West Indian. From your perspective, do you see divides among the diaspora that culture or sport can help bring together?
I grew up in sport, so I see it, yeah, but I don't, for me, it's not something that I believe or support, you know, because I think I'm lucky that sports brings us together. You know, this is, this has been my life. So I see myself as a son of the world. I truly appreciate that my dad is Nigerian, my mom is Kenyan. My wife's dad is from Guinea, my mom is from Sierra Leone. I was born in England and lived in England for 9 months before my parents moved back to Nigeria. So I have a British passport, so I relate with being British too. Lived in America, went to school, worked. I relate with that. Lived all over the world scouting. Yeah, whether it was in Serbia, in Russia, in South America, all these places, you know, like went to school in North Dakota. You know, it's to me, my kids born in Canada. My wife is American. Like, however you look at it, you know, we can lay all those passports and there's 100 of them. You know, however you look at it, we are people of the world. You know, and not everybody can be like that. I totally understand. But if I'm like that, I really have to spread that word, you know, because we have to see the world that way. And we have to be open, you know, to the world that way, to believe in people and believe in youth, especially, I feel. Believe in cultures. Yeah. To me, those things are so important. Especially in this day and age and now in these times, you know, like when needed the most and there's so much divide.
Gala used to be the pinnacle event. Now it's one of many, but I ask you to be a bit of a salesman. What's in store for Gala this year?
Well, looking forward to it. 20th anniversary. We were celebrating and I know we have a few incredible guests. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to say. I think I'm allowed to say, yeah, Boyz II Men, you know, who I think every generation and everybody relates to. So we're excited. That covers almost like the 20 years. But I think I'm a big believer in moving forward and looking ahead, you know, like on what's the next 20, you know. But I've also been reminded that... we have to think about a lot of the things that have been done in this 20 years, and when I look at that night, I look at us lifting these giants up, you know, and giving them even more opportunity. I think of Nelson Mandela, who gave me an opportunity. All those things combined, I think. That night will be a night of reflection for me, and I look forward to it.
I know you want to, so I'll allow you to. Look forward. What do the next 20 look like?
It's going to become, I think it's going to depend on how I sleep and wake up, you know, like after that night and what we decide to do. My guys always call me crazy because I will... we'll come up with all kinds of stuff, but building courts, all the dreams of this youth, how we engage more of our alumni, maybe another festival in the future. Where do we see women, you know, like becoming even bigger? More collaborations that we can do, and more youth that we can affect on the continent. But I really look forward to it, more winning.
And lastly, make you a salesman again. Why should people get to the continent and go visit Africa?
It's the best place in the world. Simple. Yeah, I'm biased, but to me, There's something about the continent, something about Africa that's different from the rest of the world.
Thank you so much to Masai, who is one of the most busiest men I've ever come across. So the fact that he was able to carve out some time to talk to me is appreciated. The other thing that is appreciated is donation. You can't listen to what we just did and not want to act and do something. So there's a couple ways you can support. The Lift a Giant program is one way to make a donation. We will have a link to it in our show notes. Essentially, it aims to provide a life-changing experience for African youth through grants, enabling them to attend camps and clinics like the ones Masai explained. And then the other way that you can support is getting a Canada Goose vest, as we talked about with Masai's. They partnered with Giants of Africa. It's actually a multi-year partnership. So the non-for-profit youth basketball organization that Masai funded is getting some funding and support from Canada Goose. The capsule has dropped, so you can go to a store. If you're here in Toronto, you go to the Toronto Eden store, where 100% of the proceeds from this collection are being donated to Giants of Africa. So that's another way that you can support and be styling and profiling. We're going to take a break and talk to someone who has not only helped support with their time and energy, but who is a real shining light on what you can do through the game of basketball by essentially putting in a good day's work and being a good person. We catch up with Coach Jama after the break.
My name is Lucille Bryan.
I'm Clifton Bryan.
My grandson is the show.
And I'm so happy that you are listening to Going Deep with Donovan Bennett.
I'm so glad that he had the show. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Grandma and Granddad. And as we mentioned, we'll go deep on Jama in his story. And it's a fascinating one. This is a guy who was born in Swaziland to a Swazi father and Canadian mother. At four, moves to Mozambique and then eventually to Toronto a year later. He moves again when he's 12, then eventually returns for grade 12 and is really struck by the vast different experiences he's had based solely on where he's lived. So by the time he goes to university here in Canada at UBC, he decides to found Concrete Hoops, which was a grassroots group that brought essentially camp and AIDS prevention programs to both Toronto and Swaziland and Brazil. So early in his basketball life, he was using his platform, albeit no matter the size, as a tool. Don't get it twisted. He could hoop. Played for UBC, was a standout player, then went on to coach at U of T and worked with the Raptors in community outreach. I remember him essentially being at Taste of the Danforth, where, you know, you could shoot a hoop and win a prize and get help with your form. Like, that was him. And by working steadily within the organization, he eventually works up to the point where he's director of basketball operations for NBA Asia, at the point where he wasn't even 30. He went on to become an assistant in Toronto and big part of the development of Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet and OG Anunoby and on and on and on. So much so, he becomes the head coach of Raptors 905. Develops players so well, the Warriors decide they're going to steal him in 2021 to develop their players as they were on the two timelines plan. Wins a championship with them, but returns now to Toronto as a lead assistant. But despite all of that travel in his basketball life, he always was supporting Giants of Africa as a volunteer. And I just wonder how much of himself he saw in the kids he's helping and how much kids, whether they're Canadian or African, can learn from the career he really got out the mud for himself and created based off of being a really solid dude and doing outstanding work. So we're going to learn some lessons as we go deep with Jama. First of all, thank you for doing this. What do you remember from your time in Swaziland?
Yeah, I think that time for me was unique in my life. I was very thankful. I was born there, first of all. So I was born there. I lived there as a baby. But my time when I returned for kind of grade 7 and grade 8, which is called Form 1 and Form 2 there, was really formative for me. And I think at that point in my life, I was understanding that the world was this bigger place. And I kind of had this Canadian identity, but then the Swazi identity. And it was the first time I could really sort of live it and, like, spend time, like, with my dad and with that side of my family and learn that, like, the perspectives that I think now have carried me through, that in these perspectives that the world is this big, broad place, but there's actually way more that's similar than different. And I think that's a really good learning from my time in Swaziland.
I imagine some of the differences were people may have treated you different in different countries, but also some of the realities were different. What perspective did you get about how life is different depending on where you live?
Yeah, I mean, I think growing up in Toronto and sort of having, like, going to elementary school here, you see the world in a certain way. The traveling piece just allows you to understand that we really have different, like histories. And I think that's what we often forget. Like, if people can look at a place, look at Africa at large, or Swaziland, or Rwanda, or whatever, and they can say, well, how is it like that? But they don't think about the history. They don't realize how it's gotten to be that way. And so for me, living there and being from there and that being home, you appreciate it more. You realize what's happened year after year, decade after decade, to get a place to where it is, and also the strength of the people to persevere through some craziness in terms of what's happened to them politically, socioeconomically, all those sorts of things, and now to be a really vibrant and incredible part of the continent, both Swaziland and Rwanda, and a place that I love to go back and visit.
So people talk about you, which they love to do. They talk about volunteer your time, volunteer your thoughts, ideas, your heart, your emotion. But let's set the record straight. You could hoop now. Take us to UBC.
Yeah.
What was Jamma the Baller like?
Yeah, so it was fun. I had a great career at UBC. I really did. I enjoyed it. I think one of the funniest parts for me, thinking back, and it was my senior season, and it was a two-game sort of thing. So the first game, we took play into the Canada West Championship. Played at Simon Fraser University. Pasha Baines was playing. He was the best player in the country, and I had to guard him. And I had this really good game where I defensively was there and, you know, locked him down, held him to less points than he likes to remember, and it was a really good experience. The next day, we play in the Canada West Championship at home, and that was a game where I actually didn't play that much. So yes, I could play, but I wasn't like the all-star. I wasn't the superstar of the team, but I loved hooping. But I loved the people part more. And that second game was a special one for me because I didn't get to play at all in the game, but yet when we won the Canada West Championship, I was the one that received the trophy for the team as a team captain, and that meant a lot. And I think it speaks to what my journey was about, but also what basketball can do, that it's really about how you engage in the situation, how you choose to react to your situation. If you're playing, if you're not playing, things are going well, not going well, it's what you do in that space that really matters.
Throughout your journey, you had different roles as a basketball player. How does that help you relate to the different roles on the team and how you can help players in the league?
Yeah, no, I think as a coach, like, being able to have empathy for where a player's at is huge. I think for me, being in a situation where sometimes I was playing a lot, my high school, really good high school, Oka Collegiate, like, really, you know, successful runs, and being real prominent part of playing on those, you can then relate to the star players and what does that mean like? What does that feel like? What does the pressure feel like? How do you navigate that pressure on a daily basis? But then also the flip side of you're the 14th man or 15th man, and you're not playing, what does that feel like? And how do you make that person still feel special, important, valued, you know, and like they're part of something? So all of that really matters. I think that the way we relate to our players as a coach is something that you work on constantly. It's never easy, and it's never like one singular answer. Everyone's different. We got to treat each person uniquely and differently.
University generally is a time where you're told to be selfish and think of yourself, especially as a student athlete, managing your time. But you decided to take your time to be philanthropic and start Concrete Hoops. Why?
Yeah, I mean, for me, it was about connecting back with Africa, to be honest. I think that I love basketball, I love people, and I loved Africa. And I think, for me, how do I combine and merge all these things? And so me and some high school buddies decided, well, let's run some basketball camps. And they were so rudimentary. Like, I'm talking, like, the most simplest of things you can imagine. I think we had, like, 6 campers in our first camp that we ran in Toronto. And year after year, we ran for about 10 or 11 years. And by the end, we were running multi-year programming in multi-country. We were in Swaziland. We were in Toronto. We did some stuff in Brazil. But it was about, like, how do we run a program that allows athletes, kids, to use this sport to become better? And for us, I mean, my high school friends, it was like, we've all benefited from basketball. We've seen that it's going to carry us through in our lives. And how do we create a situation where other people can have that same advantage and can do simple programming, but learn that basketball really is this tool that can help you navigate life and help you feel good about yourself and help you show what skills you have. And that's why Concrete Hoops was so much fun for us.
So Canada, I get. Africa, I get. Talk to me about Brazil. Why?
So Brazil was just kind of came out of nowhere. It was we were working with other nonprofit groups, and we really connected in the city, and there was people that were doing great work in Brazil, and we were about connecting. Like, we sort of, whoever was doing cool work, we wanted to be part of it. So we ended up in Brazil and did some crazy programming there as well. We actually did stuff in Nigeria. No, not Nigeria. We did stuff in Kenya as well at that point. So wherever basketball was, where kids were, we would go.
So many worthy causes. AIDS prevention. Why did that speak to you?
So Swaziland at the time, and now it's called Eswatini, so I should get it clear for the record. But at that time, it really was, I think, the number one sort of prevalence of HIV/AIDS. And that was a really difficult time. At that point, the country really couldn't survive. The education system was faltering because there weren't enough teachers. The healthcare system was faltering because there wasn't enough space, one, to care for people, and two, enough training for the doctors to manage all the people that were infected with HIV/AIDS in that time. And to me, it was an education piece of how do we use this sport to sort of cut through a lot of the sort of stigma and a lot of the sort of negativity that surrounded that, and let's use sport, which is positive and people are connected, and let's use that to educate, one, and make sure people are getting the right education that they need to sort of curb the spread of it, but also how do you support people? And I think too much, like, we look at something and something happens and people get shunned and move to the margins, and like, that can't happen in our world. Like, we need to help people more. So Concrete Hoops in those early days was about using sport in that capacity, especially within Swaziland, to give some hope and to give some sort of like light in what was potentially a dark place at that point.
Sounds in many ways similar to the goal of GOA, Giants of Africa. What's your relationship been like with the foundation over the years?
Yeah, so Giants of Africa is, of course, an incredible, incredible organization that I've been blessed to be with for, I think, I don't know, ten years or so now. And what it's about, and I think why it matters, is because it fulfills the same things that Concrete Hoops did for me. It's about giving back, it's about people, and it's about caring, and using the sport that I'm passionate about and other people are passionate about to make change. And I think if you look at the way that JOA has grown over the years, like, it's incredible. Like, watching how it operates now, watching the festival at the latest end of it to the first programming that we did years and years and years ago, like, it's grown so much. It's tremendous to see this program that means so much to so many people, and for me to be part of it has been really special.
One of the things that hasn't changed is your ability to use that passion to hype up the campers, so much so that people come back and talk about it. Doesn't really start until you're there getting everybody their mind and their energy right. Take me in that space with you on the court with those campers. What goes through you?
Yeah, I mean, I'm filled. Like, I mean, when you do a GOA camp, like, you get filled. Like, people often say, like, you go and like you help. But no, it's like completely opposite. Like, when I go, like, I'm going to get help and I'm going to get energy and to get some love and some life and some, like, some fuel for my day. And I think that when you're on the court and there's 200 kids in front of you and you're sort of like, they're seeing the excitement, I'm seeing the excitement, and you can get some clapping games going and get the energy flowing, like, that's such a special space. And I think because it cuts through the lines, like, anyone could be having a bad day that day, but in that space, you're good. Like, you're positive, your energy is right. And I think it allows you to then make good choices and good decisions to help your future. And that's why it's really cool.
You're doing it in part because of your relationship with the continent. You're also doing it in part because of your relationship with Maasai. Do you remember the first time you met him?
So I was obviously with the Toronto Raptors, and I think Maasai might have been the vice president or assistant GM at that point, first, before he moved on. So he was assistant GM, and I think there was this connection that, well, here's this guy from Africa and here's this guy from Africa, and like, so we got to connect. And so this obvious connection that let's work together. And one of the earliest things, he was running Basketball Without Borders at that point, really sort of prominent in the NBA programming, and he said, why don't you come and help out with one of those programs? And that was like this light bulb moment for me to take Concrete Hoops to then move it to this big, broad, like, program with Basketball Without Borders. And then over these last sort of 6 or 7 years to really fine tune it with Giants of Africa. And I think I feel so blessed that I've been able to see so much programming on the continent and learn, like, what works, what doesn't work, what are the things that really have resonance, what doesn't, and be able to fine tune it so that we can make as big an impact as possible. And I think Maasai and I have that same vision, right? That same sense of how do we just impact youth? And how to use a sport that we both love and are both passionate about to do that. And it's not easy, and it doesn't always work, but when you come back year after year and session after session, you have more chance of success.
We talked to him. He talked extensively about how you have helped him. How has he helped you in your journey?
I mean, one, he's the role model for me. And I think that goes without enough credit. Like, that stuff's really important, I think, for young people to see someone that they can look to and aspire to and sort of journey towards. He's given me a lot of hope. He's shown me what's possible on the continent. He's shown me what's possible in basketball. He's shown me what's possible for an African person, that they can do this in this North American context. So one, that's the first singular thing. The second thing is he's helped me with being a father and helped me with sort of living with how do you navigate life. And to me, those are the most important things. It's what we do in our day job. We coach basketball. But when I go home and see my kids, that's what matters the most. And I think learning from Masai and his example and the passion he has for his family has taught me a lot as well.
That's something that specifically men, real specifically black men, don't necessarily do, aren't open about. We don't have the same amount of communion and fellowship around it. Both of you are modeling it in a way. How important is that?
I think it's critically important. I think I'm hopefully try to resonate and amplify, like when someone asks me like what matters most to me, I hope that when they say JAMA's family, because I try and show that as much as I can. And I agree that we don't talk about it enough. I think we get caught in like, we want to be successful and we want to have the right job or the right paycheck or all these sorts of things. But like at the end of the day, that is just your job. And I think I had to learn that. And I didn't start that way. By no means did I start that way. I started with like, what job am I getting next? But I think over time, and as you grow and mature, like you realize that family truly is first. And I think if I can share that with other people too, that becomes important. I know lots of young coaches around the NBA I've talked to, and I tell them all the time, like, go home and see your family. It matters more than, you know, working for another 20 minutes at the court. I think we can still be successful, still win championships, but if their family's not there, and this, I'll sort of share this story, that in both championships I've been thankful to win, as soon as we've won, the person that I want to see first is my wife and my kids, because that's who you do it for. That's what the work is about. That's what matters the most.
Part of your role professionally has been raising some players, not just the kids. Fred, OG, Pascal, you know, their ascension, you had a huge hand in. What's that experience been like for you to work from players from the ground up to the point where they're established names in the league?
I think that's the joy. I love working with young people, young players, and seeing their journey. And to me, it's never singular. It's never like one workout defines what that's about. It's like over the course of 6 months, over the course of 20 games, over the course of 2 years, or 10 years down the road, where do they grow? And like seeing that joy for me is really important. Like for me, looking at players, like seeing Fred having success right now is so valuable, and knowing I was part of that. Seeing Pascal with our group and OG, seeing guys like Norman Powell, like the guys that I've journeyed with and spent time with, even some of the Warrior guys who I've worked with in the last few seasons, and seeing them be successful. You always want those guys to play well and to do well, because you've connected with them as a person first, and you've known who are their families, what motivates them, what are their challenges in life. And working that through and being able to support people on their journey the way I was supported in my journey, that's what matters. Like, that's the stuff where like I go home and I'm like, I had a great day because I helped someone get better.
You mentioned the two championships, and you mentioned the time with the Warriors. You know, it's a bit of a mafia where no one leaves, but you're the one that got away. What was that experience like, and what was that decision like?
Yeah, I think both directions. So I think leaving here was really difficult. So Toronto's where I'm from. This is my home team. And I think, you know, leaving anywhere was a really difficult choice. But probably the Warriors were the one place where it's like, I think I can make this one work. And Steve Kerr is incredible. And Steph Curry is incredible. And Draymond and Clay and Andre Iguodala and those guys. Like, learning from them and being part of that for two seasons really has helped me grow as a person, firstly. And then obviously as a basketball coach as well. And winning a championship was incredible. And seeing the work that Steph puts in and seeing that organization at an elite level was special. And I think I probably would have stayed there unless Toronto came calling again. And I think there's probably very few places I would have left the Warriors for, but Toronto obviously is one. And Toronto, because it's home, because Masai is here, because there's a passion for basketball, and because this is my city. And this, I want to win again here. And I think that idea and that sense of, can we come back and rebuild here and really start the pieces going again in a way that puts us in that championship sort of scope again is important, and it matters. And I think that matters in my heart. A lot of people just coach, and whoever gives you a paycheck, that's who you coach for. But Toronto will always be my blood.
Everyone I've talked to who's been around Steph says, you think you know, but you have no idea, both as a culture setter and as a player. Anecdotally, was there a moment or an experience where you realized, okay, this dude is different?
Yeah, to me, it was my first time I met him. So Steph, I had all this sense of, wow, incredible human being, incredible basketball player. You get all those rumors, and you hear that, right, obviously. But my very first day on the job, and you're nervous, you're a new coach, you're going to a new environment, championship sort of program, and I walk in the gym, and he was doing his workout, and he stopped his workout in the middle of his workout, which most NBA players do not do, and came up to me and greeted me by name and said he was so thankful I was there, excited for what I was going to bring. He knew who I was before we'd even connected. That means this guy's locked in. And that means he cares about people. And that, for me, set the stage to say, well, okay, that's Steph Curry doing that. Like, now I feel comfortable. I feel welcome. And obviously the journey continued from there. So he is special. I'm always blown away by how much is on his plate, but yet how much he can be present each and every day. With a million things to do, he can find a way to have a conversation one-on-one with you, and it means a lot, and it matters to him. And that's something I try and emulate as well. I think he's an incredible human being for that reason.
You're the common denominator when it comes to championships, Golden State, Toronto, Raptors 905, obviously, has had success, and you got the opportunity to be a head coach. What was your experience like with 905 in a different role than the one you had previously?
Yeah, I think there's no substitute for being like the head coach. It's being, you can be assistant for a really long time, but it's a different job being the head coach. And that for me was incredible. To learn what that really felt like and to go game after game and figure out the referees and figure out the players and figure out all the dynamics that go to coaching a team was special. The part that was most special was in that head coaching position, you can impact change even more. You can really help a player's future. You can help them on a pathway that gives them more success. And that was what mattered. That's why I enjoyed coaching so much. The games were incredible. There's a buzz to like coaching the game and trying to win the game that's so incredible. But in that process of trying to win, like growing people along the way, felt like this really wonderful situation. And I think for Toronto too, like that's been such a pathway for so many players. So for me to be part of that and part of a legacy of great coaches that have coached at the 905 has meant a lot to me, and their continued success and continued sort of work in our overall success as an organization is really important.
What's the experience been like for you coming back and being back in the building and in the city?
Yeah, so obviously sort of the team had challenging years, like starting in Tampa where I was with the team in Tampa and then moving its way through. And so coming back has been this really interesting journey for me. Like it feels like I've never left, but at the same time, it feels like it's really different. An entire new coaching staff has shifted the whole feel of it. Coach Darko's incredible. His energy, his passion, the way he sort of helps and promotes and provides a space where players can grow and coaches can grow has been really special. So that energy has been wonderful to be part of. And then you have all the people that you knew from before, right? So whenever you see familiar faces, you're always, you know, you see a familiar face, you greet them with a hug and a smile. And so my first few days was hugs everywhere with so many people back in the building. And it's nice to be back in this space. This is a really special place. And I've been here for a really long time. And I think as you look back in your life, you think of the journeys you go on. And my journey with the Raptors has been an incredible one. From some really low points, to very low win seasons, all the way to championships and everything in between. And to be part of that and be able to have this history of like being part of it matters a lot. And really excited for the next chapter of the Raptors.
Speaking of being back, you get to go back to the continent given the work you're doing. For people who haven't been, what would you say as to why they need to visit Africa?
I think it's something you need to do. It's hard to talk about it without doing it. And most people that do it will come back again and again and again. There's something special there. There really is. Everyone that's gone says it. Everyone that's been part of a Giants of Africa program knows it. Everyone that was Concord Hoops many, many years ago, they feel it. They always want to come back because you're connected. There's a connectivity with the continent, you know, that you can't replace anywhere. You can't do other ways. And it doesn't matter your history. It doesn't matter if you're sort of black or white or whatever. There's something there that's special. There's an energy around being on the continent and working with people, especially when you do it with sport, right? And that really galvanizes things. And now you've got this commonality of sport and you got this passion for the world. And when those two things come together, man, it's special. So I encourage anyone, whenever you can, be part of it. Do something to affect change and do it however you can. If it's in your own neighborhood, then do that. But if you can get to the continent or can sort of travel wherever is passion, where passion lies for you, then do that, because that's how you really affect people.
As black people, the world treats us the same, but even within our own community, we can be divisive based off of where you're born or where your parents are born, whether you're North Africa, South Africa, Canada, West Indies, America. You've had the chance to live so many places, experience so many different people. What's your perspective been on the ability to create community within the diaspora?
Yeah, I mean, you're right. My history is really unique, right? And I think that owning that and our identities are so caught up in how we feel about ourselves. And so I think for sort of like a black person who has a white mother and a black African father, that's been this sort of like this pulling back and forth my entire life. And where do I fit? Where do I not fit? I have this white Canadian experience that's sort of very, you know, middle class and well-to-do and figuring those things out. And I have this sort of African identity that's sort of really coming, you know, people like working through and living on the homestead and figuring that reality out. And I'm back and forth my whole life. That is my identity. And I have to be authentically me within that. I can't be more this or more that. I just have to be me. And for me, that's about trying to be positive every day, care for people, and that matters. And so one, that makes me feel okay because I'm just being me. As it relates to sort of the diaspora and for people sort of working in Africa and connecting with Africa, like, it's the same thing. Like, an African is an African, a Canadian is a Canadian. They're people that have passions and care about things, and their families. That's a through line for sure. And how do you connect with a family? And how do you find a way to provide for your family? And if you can do those things with that, with some joy, now you're living a pretty good life, and it doesn't really matter where you are to do that.
You get to work with GOA alumni like Precious right here to see what the alumni have grown to be, both in and outside of sport. What's that been like?
Yeah, to me it's multifaceted. So one is the simple one of like the players and former GOA campers that are now sort of established NBA players. That's the easy story, right? And you look at people like Precious and you see where he's at now, obviously playing for the Raptors, right? Charles Bassey, who plays, I think, Spurs right now. Like, these players that have done GOA camps, that are from the continent and are now NBA players. Incredible success stories. You're so proud of them. You're so happy. You're so amazed, right, of the journey they've been on. But to me, a lot of the GOA alumni stories are ones not of basketball players. It's of young campers who sort of were mobilized and sort of saw the world for the first time coming to our camp, and then have moved on to do things in politics, to do things in government, to do things in the legal field, and now are sort of like having these successful lives and careers because of the choices hopefully they learned from or helped and supported with in Giants of Africa. Those are the stories that to me like really are so cool, because there's more of those. So you realize maybe there's five players, but there's maybe 50 campers that lives have been completely changed, and fundamentally sort of the world has opened up because of their experience with us.
And lastly, your story. As someone who started in sport in a, you know, community development role, you know, all the way to on the bench winning championships, if someone watching this could learn one thing from your journey, your story, what would you want it to be?
Wow, that's a really good question. I think that each day you just need to approach the day with the right attitude. And you're not really sure where that's gonna go. And sometimes, like, there's people have bad days, and I think that's okay. But I think if you approach with the right attitude, you can work your way through that bad day and make it a slightly better day. And then the next day maybe get slightly better than that. And it's about a long journey. I think that's the real key. I think if you look at my career, it's been about these long, slow steps towards a direction that's been successful. And it's simple choices along the way. And those choices usually are about being kind to people. It's about sharing. It's about the things that we all talk about all the time. You learn in kindergarten. I just kept doing them. Just be happy and support people and help them and share. And like, those things actually work and resonate. And I think I just encourage people to keep doing that. Be authentically themselves. Enjoy each and every day. And like I tell my players all the time, to really enjoy like sunny days. And you create your own sunny days each and every way. So have your good sunny day.
Well, both in Canada and on the continent, there are so many people who are happy for your success. So thank you for making it a sunny day for all of us.
Appreciate you. Thanks so much.
Thanks so much to Jama and Masai. Proud of both of them. Inspired by both of them. If you are inspired and you want to do something with that feeling that hopefully we evoked from you, again, go into our show links. If you're listening to this via podcast, you get all the information there in terms of how you can support GOA. If you're listening on radio, thank you. People still do that, and it's important. Feel free to subscribe to the podcast so that you get this no matter if you're in the car or listening to radio on home. And subscribe to the podcast because you can get the resources that we talk about in this show, like the Giants of Africa donation link. That's all from me. Enjoy GOA weekend. We'll talk to you soon.